are Spit Takes, Constant Insult, and Critter Thing. More information about Mary Jam at Pillar is available at pillar.com.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and around the world at kfai.org. The community's true voice.
This is North Star Stories, voices from where we live. Today in Minnesota,
crews work to reconstruct historic Southern Minnesota Bridge. Then, a group of concerned citizens is calling for more protection for the state's natural resources. And an important reminder for hunters. I'm Chantel Sings. Work is moving ahead to rebuild Mankato's historic Kern Bridge. Originally built in 1873 in South Bend Township, crews dismantled the bridge in 2020 and stored it for future restoration. Now, it will be rebuilt as a pedestrian bridge linking local parks. The Mankato City Council has approved an $8.3 million bid from Redstone Construction, bringing the total project cost to about $10.5 million. Most funding will come from federal and state resources, with construction set to begin next month. In today's main story, a group of water protectors and citizen scientists is calling for more transparency from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources about post-pipeline construction. Maya Hecht has the story.
In the years since oil began running through Enbridge's Line 3 replacement pipeline, Line 93, Minnesota water protectors and citizen scientists have taken environmental monitoring into their own hands.
Right after construction of the pipeline was completed, this group formed called Wadikawad Amikwag, which is Ojibwe for those who help beaver.
BKCAC is a federally licensed drone pilot who began working with Wadikawad Amikwag to take infrared aerial photos of the post-construction pipeline corridor.
And with thermal data, you can see upwelling water when the ground is very cold.
Line 93 crosses over 200 bodies of water, wetlands, rivers, and natural springs. The upwelling that B is looking for is a potential sign of construction damage.
We took that data and started to visit those sites on foot and or with drones to figure out if those were actual aquifer breaches.
And the group continued to visit those sites for years. In a Minneapolis conference room where Bea recently presented photos of upwelling water, she expressed disappointment that the DNR had not accepted her invitation to attend.
I just want them to be transparent with us. I want them to have compassion and empathy for those of us who care about this land.
I think that we're actually really transparent with this project.
Randall Dineen is a section manager with the Minnesota DNR.
We won't be able to keep, you know, like a running tally of monthly processes, but we're certainly very much, you know, keeping that website up to date.
The DNR's website does list updates on Line 93, including reports of 4 aquifer breaches caused during construction. The most recent DNR entry is dated over 2 years ago.
Things don't necessarily stay fixed.
Geologist Laura Triplett used to help Wadikawad Amikwag digest their data. With concern for wetland health, that group is currently calling for more communication from the DNR about environmental damages inflicted by Enbridge.
What Enbridge did here was careless and reckless in that they went through and punctured aquifers, changed the hydrology, and we may not really know the long-term impacts of that for quite a while.
In an email to North Star Stories, Enbridge states that the Line 3 replacement project was built under the most comprehensive regulatory framework in the state's history, with more than 60 federal, state, local, and tribal approvals. The email goes on to say that while there have been some problems, it has identified, self-reported, and corrected the problems. Maya Hecht for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. With hundreds of thousands of hunters preparing for Minnesota's firearms deer opener this month, the Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, is reminding everyone that safe hunts are successful hunts. Officials urge hunters to review firearm safety, wear blaze orange or pink, and carefully select their hunting locations. They also advise checking all tree stand equipment. DNR officials say the goal is for every hunter, hiker, and anyone enjoying the outdoors to return home safely.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's broadcast, another Minnesota-based company announces layoffs. Then, how some northern communities are supporting those affected by food shortages. And the federal government has a new rule for work permits. I'm Chrissy J. Agribusiness giant Cargill says it will permanently lay off 80 employees in Minnesota as part of a global workforce reduction. Cargill is a multinational food corporation located in the western suburbs of the metro area. The company says the layoffs are not tied to automation. Affected workers will receive severance pay and job placement support at the end of the year. In recent weeks, major corporations, including Target, have announced mass layoffs. Next, in this month's report from the Northeast, the news director from Amper Station WTIP talks to Victor Palomino about how the Grand Marais community is organizing to support those affected by the conflicts at the federal level.
Many local governments, community members, and businesses are preparing to meet the growing need for food support. This includes communities in the northeastern Minnesota, where Kelly Hopkins is WTIP Radio's news director.
Our local Cook County Public Health and Human Services come forward and start preparing with additional resources and opportunities for those who are seeking those benefits. Another great thing that we've seen in our community is that a handful of our local business owners have also stepped forward.
Kelly says local coffee shops, grocery stores, and other businesses are offering gift cards and discounts to help people in need.
Basically being a resource in a spot in town where people can go to if they need a hot meal or if they need some food. And so it's been really great to see that kind of the synergy and the momentum in our community in the last week.
According to WTIP, Cook County officials and the county's Public Health and Human Services Department report that an average of 335 residents receive food benefits each month.
And that can range anywhere from as small as $23 a month that they receive. It could go all the way up to $1,158, just depending on factors such as income and household size.
WTIP also reports that county leaders say that they are working to support residents facing food insecurity through the coming months, regardless of what happens at the national level.
From right now until the end of the year, end of 2025, there will be a food drive set up in the lobby of our local Cook County Courthouse here.
Several collection bins will be set up for self-serve donations, where individuals can contribute unopened, non-expired, non-perishable food items.
It's also a place for individuals that need food to stop in, look through the bins, and select the items that they may need as well. So that'll be at the lobby of our Cook County Courthouse throughout the end of 2025.
In other WTIP news, construction is underway on an expansion for the Cook County Law Enforcement Center.
Yeah, so this is part of a larger capital improvement project with our county here, and this was approved back in August of 2023. So recently held a groundbreaking ceremony with a handful of county officials, the construction crews there as well, our Cook County Sheriff's, but it's looking to address some safety issues, some space concerns there for the Sheriff's Department. Particularly, this expansion project will go to improve some evidence storage and then add a new sally port so that a ambulance can fit into that back area there within the law enforcement center.
Work will continue as long as the weather allows and is expected to be completed by next summer.
If you're looking to learn more about things happening, news happening along the North Shore here in the Northeast region, you can head over to WTIP.org.
For North Star Stories, I'm Victor Palomino.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Department of Homeland Security, also known as DHS, has announced a new rule ending automatic extensions of work permits for most non-citizens. Starting last month, those renewing employment authorization must wait for DHS approval before their documents are extended. Officials say the change allows for more frequent background checks to detect fraud and protect national security. The rule does not affect extensions granted before the new policy takes effect.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
In today's stories, the state aims to keep funding for healthcare. Then, how can a simple battery be a major fire hazard? And an organic conference returns to central Minnesota. I'm Chantel Sings. Minnesota's Attorney General joined 21 attorneys general from other states in supporting Planned Parenthood's lawsuit against the Trump administration's efforts to block federal Medicaid funding. The lawsuit alleges that the so-called defund provision would cut access to essential healthcare services like cancer screenings and birth control. The coalition's brief urges the First Circuit Court of Appeals to uphold a lower court ruling that blocked the funding ban. Next, lithium-ion batteries power everything from phones to e-bikes, but they can also pose serious fire risks if handled incorrectly. Reporter Faya Adam tells us how to prevent these fires.
Recently, the life of the Freeman family was changed completely. Their home in Woodbury, east of St. Paul, caught on fire. The cause? A lithium-ion battery explosion.
We were still in bed. It was about 8 o'clock in the morning. We hadn't even woken up yet.
Patty Freeman says the fire was caused by human error after her son tried to charge the battery.
Kind of guessed right away that it was a lithium battery because of where the fire started in the basement. Within 20 minutes of him plugging in the battery, it exploded.
Lithium-ion batteries, a type of rechargeable battery characterized by higher energy efficiency and a longer cycle life than other types of rechargeable batteries, are in many of today's devices, like cell phones, laptops, lawn tools, and even children's toys. Yet, many people don't know about the battery's hidden risk.
We see that lithium-ion batteries could be charged incorrectly. They maybe have physical damage to them.
Daniel Cryer is a state fire marshal. He says using non-certified chargers and knockoff batteries increases the risk of lithium-ion batteries exploding or catching on fire.
With modern conveniences, it can be easy to buy the cheap product or the easiest to grab product off the shelf or at the online store. Those don't necessarily always come with the same testing and safety features that the original manufacturer provides.
All fires give off toxic smoke, but lithium-ion battery fires are different. The metals and plastics inside can release even more dangerous chemicals, such as cyanide, into the air. To help prevent these kinds of fires, there are a few simple safety steps you can take. Buy only products with a safety mark from a nationally recognized testing lab, which ensures they meet safety standards. Use only chargers approved by the manufacturer for that specific device. Avoid charging items when you're not home, and place devices on a flat surface away from anything flammable. Store batteries in a cool, dry place away from direct sunlight.
If we can change those and influence those behaviors to where people are purchasing a product that's going to keep it safe, a charger that's safe, a cord that's been rated for that battery, that will definitely prevent and lower a lot of risk from more of these batteries being on the market.
For more fire prevention tips, visit your local fire department's website or dps.mn.gov. For North Star Stories, I'm Fire Adam.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota Organic Conference is returning to St. Cloud next year. Hosted by the Department of Agriculture, the event will feature more than 30 breakout sessions and an 80-booth trade show focused on organic farming and research. The keynote speaker will share strategies for improving soil health and farm resilience, and a new farmer-led panel will explore the future of organic agriculture. Registration is now open for participants. For details, visit the Minnesota Organic Conference website.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Today, a former officer involved in the murder of George Floyd is a free man. Then, the state has a new Hall of Fame for a growing sport. And a new study reveals fewer drug overdose deaths in the state. I'm Gracie J. One of the former Minneapolis officers convicted in George Floyd's killing is out of prison. 39-year-old Tu Tao served his federal and state sentences simultaneously at a Kentucky facility. According to the Minnesota Department of Corrections, the Anoka County Community Corrections Office is supervising Tao's release. With the exception of Derek Chauvin, Tao is the last of the former officers to leave prison. Chauvin is scheduled to remain in custody until 2037. In today's main story, a new Minnesota Hall of Fame aims to tell the native origins and local history of this growing sport. Recently, it welcomed its freshman class of inductees. Britt Ahmet takes us to the Minnesota Lacrosse Hall of Fame.
The moves of basketball, the change of direction dodge, the shooting and arm movement of baseball and softball, the contact of football, and the running of soccer.
Mark Helenek is talking about the multifaceted sport of lacrosse.
It was the best of all the sports that I ever played.
Mark dove into lacrosse as an undergraduate student in New Jersey. But after college, his wife had ideas about moving to Minnesota.
And I said, okay, as long as we can start lacrosse in Minnesota. And sure enough, back in like 1995, we started the Minnesota chapter of U.S. Lacrosse.
This June, Mark, now retired from a career in coaching, took his passion for the sport to another level. He founded the Minnesota Lacrosse Hall of Fame. It's a virtual museum with a very real mission.
To honor our state's best players, coaches, officials, and contributors to the game, but also to grow the sport.
This month, the Hall of Fame inducted its freshman class of honorees. In Minnesota, the modern version of lacrosse has enjoyed some level of popularity since the 19th century, but it's a far older game created and enjoyed by Indigenous people.
As an Indigenous person, we're taught that the games were given to us by the Creator.
Welcome to Indigenous Games 101.
Dan Ninham from the Oneida Nation was a coach for some four decades. He established the Bemidji Lacrosse Recreational Program, where most participants were hockey players and had to travel out of state to find other teams to play against. Lacrosse has since become a high school sport in Bemidji. Dan, also a producer with AMPR's program Minnesota Native News, was one of this year's Hall of Fame inductees. He feels honored and also recognizes that the work of teaching and spreading the sport has been a team effort.
There's a number of people that are involved with the lacrosse development, with the revitalization of the lacrosse game.
These days, Dan travels Minnesota and several other states as an Indigenous games instructor. This year, he's logged 66,000 miles. Among the games he teaches are the Indigenous wooden stick forms of lacrosse.
People have referred to me as an expert, but I don't really believe in expertise. I believe in being a knowledge carrier, but always learning. I'm always learning on how to make a connection with the students and whoever I'm working with.
The Minnesota Hall of Fame named one of its awards after Dan. This year, it was awarded to the founder of the Twin Cities Native Lacrosse Program. The Hall of Fame hopes to spend most of its time and its budget starting youth programs, providing scholarships, and training a new generation of coaches. Mark Helenek.
The overall goal is to grow the game in Minnesota.
Find out more at mnlacrossehof.org. This is Britt Ahmet for North Star Stories.
You
are listening to North Star Stories. A new report released by the Minnesota Department of Health shows a continued decline in drug overdose deaths. Synthetic opioids remain the leading cause of fatal overdoses, though deaths decreased across all opioid categories last year. The report reveals that for every overdose death, nearly 15 people were treated for non-fatal overdoses in hospitals. Hospital-treated overdoses also fell, reaching their lowest level since 2018. Officials say the drop reflects the impact of prevention and harm reduction efforts.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
The state and Leech Lake band members sign a cannabis compact. Then, we try to figure out why we're seeing an increase in hate-motivated attacks in our state. And a pilot project for same-day driver's licenses that didn't pan out. I'm Chantel Saints. Governor Tim Walz and the Office of Cannabis Management have signed a new tribal state compact with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. The agreement outlines how the state and tribe will ensure public health and safety in Minnesota's adult-use cannabis industry while honoring tribal sovereignty. Officials say the partnership will strengthen trust in the state's regulated market. The Leech Lake Band joins four other tribal nations that have reached similar agreements with the state. Next, political and hate-motivated attacks have drawn headlines across Minnesota this year. But are they a growing threat, or has increased political polarization changed people's perception? Zan Holston has more.
In recent months, vandals sprayed a South Minneapolis synagogue with pro-Hamas graffiti. Someone hit Senator Omar Fateh's mayoral race headquarters with anti-Muslim messaging. A man, since arrested, allegedly firebombed an LGBTQ-friendly ice cream parlor twice. And St. Paul police charged a man for allegedly tearing down pride flags and damaging businesses all summer. Those recent events, coming on the heels of the assassination of Senator Melissa Hortman and the shooting at Annunciation School, have fueled the sense that political and hate-motivated violence is on the rise, even if the data isn't always necessarily so clear.
Certainly it makes people feel much less safe in those settings if they feel like they are being targeted or at risk.
Dr. Michelle Phelps is a sociology professor at the University of Minnesota. She said that ambiguity makes it hard to track trends or assign motives.
It's really hard definitionally to figure out exactly what counts as political violence versus other kinds of violence.
Still, every new incident changes how people feel about safety in their neighborhoods, workplaces, or places of worship. And when fear rises, Phelps said, communities often respond by adding barriers.
People's reactions to those moments of insecurities are often to tighten up on security measures.
That might look like more police at schools in response to shootings or armed security at places of worship, but that can also increase feelings of anxiety and separateness. Phelps said that approach misses the deeper question. How do you reach people before they become isolated or radicalized?
The answer is often not, okay, how do we reach out to people? How do we build community? And that is always going to be a kind of losing proposition in terms of long-term safety.
Respect for civil discourse, for pluralism. We've lost that.
Monica Harris leads the nonprofit FAIR, the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism, a self-described centrist organization working to reduce political polarization through education and dialogue. She said these tensions aren't new, but the volume has gone up.
Hate crimes, polarization, and intolerance have been in this country I'm not going to say it's endemic, but we're no strangers to this.
Harris points to constant political and cultural fights online, from partisan rhetoric to identity-driven social media debates, is fueling a sense of division and threat.
That actually fuels a lot of these identity-motivated attacks because it creates a cycle of fear, of division.
For Harris, reversing these cycles won't come from following the lead of politicians, but from finding ways to truly communicate with people who aren't the same as us and who we might disagree with.
It's not going to come from the leadership because there are too many people whose platforms and whose campaigns thrive on division.
She said this has to start in schools and neighborhood conversations where people actually listen to each other as a community and not enemies in a culture war.
The change we want has got to come from below and trickle upwards.
For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The state is phasing out a pilot program that let Minnesotans receive same-day driver's licenses and ID cards. The Lakeville License Center, located 20 miles south of Minneapolis, was one of two locations testing on-the-spot printing, but differences in card quality and appearance caused problems for some customers. The Division of Driver and Vehicle Services has recommended ending the program, though same-day service will continue in Moorhead for now. All same-day cards will remain valid until they expire.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
You're listening to Minnesota Native News. I'm Murray Rock. This week, we take a look at a new art exhibit honoring two-spirit individuals, and we hear from one of the inductees for the Minnesota Lacrosse Hall of Fame. First, producer Deanna Standing Cloud stopped by Queering Indigeneity, an exhibit at the Minnesota Museum of American Art.
For Indigenous people in Minnesota, two-spirit relatives have long been held in high regard. They often served as spiritual healers, community leaders, and carried a great social influence. Across Native communities today, there's a powerful resurgence, and many are reclaiming and celebrating the teachings of the Two-Spirit Society.
When Two-Spirit people are standing in their power and they understand their gifts and they bring their gifts forward and they bring that medicine into the community, that's when tribal communities are going to thrive.
Penny Kagagabe is a citizen of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe and lead curator for the exhibit Queering Indigeneity at the Minnesota Museum of American Art in St. Paul, also known as the M.
I'm a community activist. I'm a longtime queer activist, and that's all kind of just kind of come together in this community collaboration for Two-Spirit cultural reclamation that grew and became this exhibit, Queering Indigeneity.
Nearly 500 visitors attended that day, including Dr. Kate Bean, executive director of the M.
From my understanding, I'm one of the first executive directors of an American art museum to be Native. I entered the field in order to change it.
Dr. Kate Bean is a citizen of the Flandreau Santee Dakota. She is also a local historian and researcher of Dakota history.
We're an organization that's been around since the 1890s. We actually started as a school, the St. Paul School of Fine Arts. And the organization was started by some neighborhood arts enthusiasts and supporters who at that point in time didn't look like us.
For Indigenous people in Minnesota, honoring the Two-Spirit community is vital.
I think the only way to survive right now is to lean into relationships and to remember who we are. And that's where this exhibition is so beautiful to be coming out right now.
The exhibit is free and open to the public through August 2026. For more information, visit mmaa.org. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Deanna Standing Cloud.
Next, Travis Zimmerman talks to Minnesota Native News producer Dan Ninham about being inducted into the Minnesota Lacrosse Hall of Fame.
Oneida Elder Dan Ninham and his wife Susan have been involved with Indigenous games for almost half a century. And lacrosse, known as the Creator's Game, has always been more than just a sport to Dan.
There's similar connections to a number of Indigenous people throughout North America that believe that the Creator gave us the game to play for his amusement and for other reasons as well, anywhere from honoring people to helping with the healing process as a medicine game. It's all good medicine.
Dan has been an athlete most of his life, and he's been playing lacrosse for over 40 years.
I was at Oneida Tribal School K-8 physical education teacher for about 8 years. Soon after getting there in 83 or so, made the career commitment to Indigenous games and implemented that into the curriculum.
Dan feels like his greatest contribution has been growing the game and the number of Native children introduced to it.
We continue with that and have encouraged a number of other people throughout Minnesota, Ojibwe and Dakota communities, as well as urban communities to play the wooden stick game and to play the modern stick game with cultural connections to the modern stick game.
Earlier this month, there was an awards banquet for the first inductees to the Minnesota Lacrosse Hall of Fame. Dan attended with his wife, Susan, and was honored for his contributions to reviving a game central to tribal identities in the past.
And it's nice to be recognized by my colleagues. I look at it as being an honor to be where I am the second. And it's not the end, it's just it's a continuance.
For Minnesota Native News, this is Travis Zimmerman.
That's all for this week's episode. Join us next time for more voices and stories that inform, uplift, and shape our communities right here on Minnesota Native News. Minnesota Native News is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting East Forest at the Cedar Cultural Center Friday, November 14th. Neoclassical, ambient, electroacoustic, indie pop, East Forest is all of those and more. His music is calming yet uplifting, contemplative yet active, grand in scale yet singular in focus. His new album is Lovingly. It's a sensory journey for mind, body, and soul. More information about First Avenue presenting East Forest